It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. Currently 43 degrees. It is a beautiful day. We're looking for sunny skies today with a high near 45. Northwest wind steadily at 25, gusting to 35 today and up to 45 tonight. Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 32. Increasing clouds for tomorrow with a high of 41, northwest wind gusting to 40 tomorrow, too. For Saturday night, mostly cloudy skies will gradually become mostly clear. Coming up on the Midday Report, 5 months after a massive cyber attack on Alaska's health department, Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration is trying to keep the details secret. Providence, Alaska Medical Center has sent out an open letter regarding efforts to mitigate COVID-19. And Jewish leaders and Holocaust scholars are objecting to opponents of mask mandates using the Star of David as their symbol. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden is visiting Capitol Hill, eager to unite congressional Democrats, sparring over a scaled-back version of his $3.5 trillion spending package of expanded social programs and climate initiatives. Disagreement on that is holding up a vote on his trillion-dollar infrastructure bill. In the House, Progressive Caucus Chair Pramila Jayapal told reporters earlier today that the Senate needs to first vote on the reconciliation bill before there's movement on the bipartisan-backed infrastructure plan.
I am open to hearing what other options there are for that, but I am very concerned about legislative language holding things up, Voterama changing the deal, and those are the things that have to be addressed along with the content.
In a show of bipartisanship yesterday, Congress did approve a stopgap bill that keeps the government open through at least December 3rd. A federal judge is weighing arguments in the administration's attempt to block a new Texas abortion law. NPR's Carrie Johnson reports the Justice Department argued the law defies the Constitution.
DOJ says the Texas law effectively stops most abortions after 6 weeks. Often that's even before a person realizes she's pregnant. Government lawyer Brian Netter says many women are desperate and have fled to abortion providers in nearby states if they have the means. DOJ says the Texas law violates the Supremacy Clause and the 14th Amendment's guarantee of equal protection. A lawyer for Texas says the federal government is claiming extraordinary power, but he says the U.S. can't show any injury or right to sue the state. The judge praised both sides for their arguments, but gave no timetable for his ruling. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
Carlos Watson has resigned from NPR's corporate board following a week of tumult at his digital media outlet, Ozzy. As NPR's David Folkenflik reports, Watson's resignation arrived just before a board committee was to weigh his status at the public radio network.
The week kicked off with an expose in the New York Times, and rival news outlets have followed with major revelations and allegations. Reports that Watson and Ozzy wildly inflated digital traffic figures on the sides of its audiences. Reports that Watson lied to TV producers he hired in claiming they were making a series to run on the A&E television network. Reports of lies to and about investors, even that his co-founder impersonated a YouTube executive in a conference call with Goldman Sachs. YouTube's corporate parent Google referred that to the FBI. Watson had served on the NPR board since 2016. He has publicly defended his claims and called the initial New York Times article a ridiculous hit job. David Folkenflik, NPR News.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes the day up 482 points. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Today, the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center reported 29 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. The Kodiak Public Health Office is now classifying the means of transmission for all cases of COVID-19 in the Kodiak Island Borough as community spread. 271 cases of COVID-19 are currently classified as active locally. 3 active cases are currently hospitalized in Kodiak. To date, 2,220 total cases, 84 local hospitalizations, and 7 deaths have been associated with COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. 5 months after the cyber attack that crippled Alaska's health department, Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration has released few details about the breach. And the health department, along with state technology officials, are now waging an intense fight to preserve the secrecy of records that would help Alaskans better understand what happened. State agencies have denied multiple Alaska public media records requests for a report the health department commissioned on the attack. In an affidavit filed this week as part of an appeals process, the state's top technology officer argues that releasing the report would risk further attacks and that the FBI is urging them not to do it. Alaska legislators say that they still have unanswered questions about the attack, like what kind of personal data may have been stolen, whether credit monitoring tools offered by the state are sufficient, and why lessons don't appear to have been learned from a previous hack in 2019. Liz Snyder is an Anchorage Democrat who co-chairs the House Health Committee.
The pace at which information has been released about the hack, will have to get to the bottom of that if that was done in the best manner possible. I'd like to think that it was, but we need to learn more about how Alaskans have been impacted.
Snyder says she's considering whether to schedule a hearing on the cyber attack in her committee, but she's also mindful that the health department is contending with the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Another House lawmaker says she plans to propose an information technology audit at the next meeting of the relevant committee. The audit, she says, would be confidential, but its results could give lawmakers better information about how they should handle the problem. The chief executive of Providence, Alaska Medical Center said the hospital supports a proposed masking ordinance in Anchorage in a letter to the assembly sent on Wednesday. The letter also disputed Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson's claims about hospital capacity and staffing shortages. At a meeting on Tuesday, Bronson said some 20% of Providence nurses could quit their jobs in response to the hospital's COVID-19 vaccine requirement, which goes into effect in mid-October. Providence CEO Preston Simmons said in the letter that 84% of Providence employees are already vaccinated or have an approved exemption. Simmons said Providence has not had any staff leave due to the requirement. He said other facilities in the nation have seen a 1-3% decrease in staffing as a result of vaccine requirements. At Tuesday's meeting, some members of the public also questioned whether Providence was lying about the toll and impacts of COVID-19, including the lack of available ICU beds. Quote, "The clear and unequivocal answer is no," Simmons said in the letter. As Alaska leads the nation's COVID-19 case rate, Providence has often had difficulty getting emergency room patients a hospital bed. Simmons said, "Limited resources, staffing shortages, and worker burnout are directly a result of the surge of COVID patients driven by the Delta variant." Simmons reiterated Providence's plea for Anchorage residents to follow basic prevention measures like masking and social distancing to prevent COVID-19 spread and reduce the unprecedented strain on hospital workers. The hospital supports any measures that increase the use of masks, he said, including the assembly ordinance. Jewish leaders and Holocaust scholars say it's wrong for opponents of an Anchorage mask mandate to don yellow stars, an infamous symbol of Nazi oppression, to protest a public health measure. Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson later walked back his words, but at a contentious hearing Wednesday night, he defended the use of Holocaust imagery in the mask debate.
We've referenced the Star David quite a bit here tonight, but there was a formal message that came out within Jewish culture about that, and the message was never again.
Yes.
That's an ethos, and that's what that star really means, is we will not forget, this will never happen again, and I think us borrowing that from them is actually a credit to them.
At the hearing, dozens of mandate opponents pinned yellow paper stars to their chests. A protest message was printed on them in a faux Hebrew font. Jonathan Sarna, a professor of American Jewish history at Brandeis University, says the Anchorage display was a horrible misuse of a symbol that Nazis used to dehumanize and ultimately annihilate millions of Jews.
I think that many of us find this analogy to be nothing short of appalling. To conflate those who want to save lives with those who wanted to destroy lives is to willfully kind of turn the world upside down.
Rabbi Abraham Cooper from the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles embraces the need for vigorous debate around mask mandates and vaccine requirements. He's lost family members to COVID-19, and one of his brothers had a serious reaction to the vaccine. But Cooper says it's, quote, just wrong, close quote, to exploit a symbol of Jewish suffering. He says it degrades the lessons of the Holocaust, and he says it doesn't help mandate opponents make their case.
What it does do is it beclouds the debate. It brings further emotion to a discussion and a debate that already has way too much emotion. It brings no clarity.
The tactic is not unique to Anchorage. Periodically throughout the pandemic, COVID skeptics and opponents of mask and vaccine mandates have sought to compare public health restrictions to Nazism. Bronson said Thursday that he should have chosen his words more carefully. He said people should not compare the Holocaust to a mask mandate, and he apologized if he offended anyone. The Bristol Bay Borough is experiencing a spike in COVID-19 cases due to community spread of the virus. Some restaurants and bars have closed temporarily, and the borough's health center is asking people to remain vigilant and get tested. KDLG's Izzy Ross spoke with the center's director and has this update.
Mary Swain, the executive director of the Chimay Community Health Center in Naknek, says the borough is seeing a surge of cases.
We have gone from zero cases to 19 in a matter of 2 weeks now.
Right now, she says there are 13 active cases. That is, people who have tested positive within the last 10 days. Two restaurants have had to close temporarily, as did bars in Naknek. Swain says the main concern of healthcare providers in the borough is the lack of testing.
Although we are getting people to test again, the lack of testing, we don't know really what's out there just because we haven't seen a lot of testing. The more testing we take, the sooner that we can put somebody into quarantine and not spread.
Chimay is running around 60 tests a week at the school, and Swain says there aren't any cases there right now.
It's more of the young adults that we're seeing positive cases in, and we just implore anybody and everybody to test.
She says as the virus spreads around the community, contact tracing has become difficult. For one, the borough doesn't have a state public health clinic.
Public health for us is stationed in Matsu Borough, and they are overrun with cases in the region. They handle the entire region. And so community members may not get a call from public health.
That means Chimay is handling contact tracing for all three communities in the borough.
To help people through their isolation time, contacting close contacts, which means contact tracing is not happening like it should.
Swain says another challenge is that people aren't necessarily following quarantine recommendations, which puts their fellow community members at risk.
We're seeing a lot of close contacts, not because public health is not following up with them, out and about in the community, and unfortunately we can't say anything about it. There's a lot of misinformation out there as to what close contact means. There's also miscommunication as to what it means when you're vaccinated and you're a positive case.
Anyone who tests positive must isolate for 10 days, even if they're vaccinated. Chimay estimates that 93% of Bristol Bay Borough residents have been vaccinated against the virus. Of the 23 people who tested positive for COVID-19 in September, 3 were vaccinated. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
As the U.S. and Canada uncover Indigenous school history, survivors, their children, and communities marked Orange Shirt Day on Thursday. It honored the children who died at residential and boarding schools and those who survived. KTOO's Rasha McChesney joined Juno organizers for a morning rally and has this story.
As the sun rose on Thursday, Kachnaad, Bambi James, and the Strong Women Singers finished a women's prayer song. Then they joined dozens of others waving at traffic along Egan Drive. Their bright orange t-shirts popped out against the deep blue shadows of the early morning. James, who is Tlingit, is surrounded by family. She says she's waving because she has children.
It means a lot to us, the fact that we get to keep our kids home, and our ancestors did not. Generations have come, and there's been trauma throughout the generations. And this is, I feel like this is our way of showing them that we're ending the cycle of violence against our people.
September 30th is a National Day of Remembrance for U.S. Indian boarding schools. The day was born in Canada when a residential school survivor told the story of wearing an orange shirt that her grandmother bought for her and then having it stripped off of her when she arrived at the boarding school. In Juneau, a lot of people are wearing orange shirts with a form line ovoid blue heart, and then in the center is a human face with its mouth open. It's Mike Conagoot-Kinville's design. He says the mouth is open to show that they're speaking, and the shirt reads, "Every child matters." Kinville has 10 children. His youngest is 7 years old, and he wears his feelings on the surface when he talks about the remains of 215 children found at the Kamloops Indian Residential School in British Columbia.
You know, those children didn't matter, not to the people who threw them into a grave and covered them up. So, you know, but those children matter to somebody. You know, maybe they were treated like garbage at some point, but to their families and to their people, they matter. Every child matters.
Kinville says acknowledgement from the rest of the community of the facts of the past are important. That's a big part of why so many people in bright orange shirts gathered by the side of the highway to call attention to the buried history and trauma of residential boarding schools. He says his mother told him about her experience when she was taken to Mount Edgecombe Boarding School in Sitka at just 14 years old.
In the first week, they went through a medical process, and the dentist looked at her teeth and decided to pull all of her teeth. So that was her first day in Mount Edgecombe. Her second day, when she woke up, her pillow was covered with blood. She had to wait for a month and a half for dentures to be made and sent into her. That's how she started her high school career, this pretty young lady, very quiet, shy young woman.
Kinville and others in the crowd say it's not just acknowledgement of the facts of our shared history. It's also awareness of how that history is still impacting people today.
You know, that's her trauma affects me to this day. You know, my trauma that kind of goes through me has affected my children. You know, we try and attenuate it out and make it, dampen it and make it go away, but it still lives with us. So, you know, it can't be in the past. It's in our bones.
There are a lot of threads that tie Juno to this trauma. One is that Alaska Native families in Juneau had their children taken from them and sent to other schools, sometimes out of state. Another is that the same order of nuns who taught at the Kamloops Indian Residential School in British Columbia operated schools in Juneau, too. The Sisters of St. Anne. There's a street named after them on Douglas Island and a former hospital downtown.
I don't think that people have made that connection.
That's Jamie Ann Zichten Hasselquist. She's an organizer of the events and has been working to teach people about the legacy of residential schools, including the Mayflower School. It's now the Juno Montessori School, and it stands at the end of St. Anne's Avenue. It overlooks a beach that Hasselquist says should be part of the community conversations around this history, a conversation about tangible steps the community can take, like calling that beach Anachya Andaganye instead of Sandy Beach.
If we say we want to change that name back, that's what gets people a little excited. But it's not changing, it's restoring. It's restoring its original name and recognizing that there were a people and place names here before colonization came to town.
For more information, contact the Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition. You can reach them at 612-354-7700. In Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
COVID-19 vaccinations will be required to participate in Kuskokwim 300-sponsored sled dog races this upcoming season. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur has the details.
The vaccine mandate applies to all mushers, handlers, employees, and volunteers. It requires full vaccination to participate in K300 events, and the policy says it could change to include booster shots as well. Under the policy, full COVID-19 vaccinations will be required to take part in the K300 Sled Dog Race, Bogus Creek 150, Akiak Dash, and all local races. The K300 Race Committee Board of Directors unanimously adopted the policy this month. The board is also maintaining its COVID-19 testing policy for participation in the flagship K300 Sled Dog Race. Along with being fully vaccinated, all mushers and handlers must provide a negative test to take part. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. October is National Seafood Month. And where in the world do they eat the most fish? You'll be surprised. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
October is National Seafood Month, a distinction proclaimed by Congress more than a quarter century ago to recognize one of our nation's oldest industries. Government figures show that nationwide, the seafood industry provides more than 250,000 jobs and contributes $60 billion to the U.S. economy each year. Alaska deserves special merit during Seafood Month as it produces over 60% of our nation's seafood, more than all the other states combined. The seafood industry is Alaska's number one private employer, and Alaska seafood industry ranks second only to Big Oil for the tax dollars it pumps into state coffers. Here are some more fish facts. Americans ate 16 pounds of seafood last year. That compares to more than 108 pounds of red meat and nearly 73 pounds of poultry per person. America's seafood favorites have remained largely the same. The top five are shrimp, salmon, canned tuna, pollock, and tilapia. America's seafood appetite is being fed mostly by foreign imports. More than 85% of all fish and shellfish eaten in the U.S. comes from other countries. Speaking of other countries, that 16 pounds of seafood that Americans eat pales when compared to other parts of the world. The Japanese, for example, eat 146 pounds of seafood per person each year. UN figures show that in Greenland, it's 186 pounds and more than 200 pounds per person in Iceland. The country with the lowest seafood consumption is Afghanistan at zero. And where in the world is the most seafood eaten? The South Pacific Islands of Tokelau, where each person eats more than 440 pounds of seafood every year. Celebrate seafood this month in your community. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
If you are a renter who's struggling financially due to COVID-19, Alaska Housing Rent Relief may be able to pay your rent and utility bills for up to 3 months, even if they are past due. The deadline to apply is October 1st. To see if someone you know qualifies for federal emergency rental assistance, visit alaskahousingrelief.org or call 1-844-330-8290 toll-free. That's alaskahousingrelief.org.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the first day of October, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:14. It will set again at 7:42 this evening, giving us 11 hours and 27 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 64, set in 1970. Our record low is 26, set in 1968. Currently 46, We have gone past our projected high of 45. Sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon. Northwest winds 25 steady, gusting to 35 and up to 45 tonight. It's going to get cloudier tonight. Partly cloudy skies overnight with an overnight low of 32. For tomorrow, increasing clouds, high near 41. Northwest winds continuing to blow 25, as high as 40 tomorrow, too. And for Saturday night, mostly cloudy skies, gradually becoming mostly clear on Saturday, with a low around 33 overnight. Northwest winds to 30, gusting as high as 50 on Saturday night. For Sunday, mostly sunny skies, high near 45. Northwest wind to 20, gusting as high as 25. And mostly clear skies Sunday night. Mostly sunny skies on Monday. Looking at our local tides, we just had a high tide here on the east side at 12:06 this afternoon of 6.1 feet. Our next low tide will be at 5:01 this afternoon and be 4 feet, followed by a high tide at 10:58 of 7.5 feet. And our low tide for early in the morning tomorrow will be 5:59 a.m., 6 a.m., and be 1 foot on the east side. Over on the west side, you just had a high tide as well at 12:16 p.m., a 10-foot tide. Your next low tide will be at 6:02 p.m. and be 5.7 feet, followed by a high tide at 11:34 of 11.1 feet, and your low tide for tomorrow morning in Larson Bay will be at 6:31 a.m. and be 1.4 feet. Mariners, we do have a storm warning for Saturday for the Shelikof Strait. Northwest winds to 30 knots, increasing to 40 knots in the afternoon, gusting to 50 knots out of bays and passes, seas to 9 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 50, gusting to 60 out of bays and passes, seas to 11 feet in the Shelikof. Kodiak's east side offshore, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, gale warning through Saturday. Northwest 30 will increase to 40 knots this afternoon, seas building to 11 feet. For tonight, northwest 40, seas to 13 feet. And for Saturday on our east side, northwest 45, seas to 15 feet. Join the Aleutic Museum for a virtual annual meeting with a behind-the-scenes video tour of the museum. That's happening this afternoon at 5 p.m. Just go to their Facebook page. That's Aleutic Museum Facebook page, A-L-U-T-I-I-Q. Or look for the video on their website the day of. There will be a door prize drawing for folks who comment on the Facebook event or who are current donors or members. You can also call them at 844-425-8844 with questions.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
KMXT is supported in part by Orion's Mountain Sports, featuring equipment, clothing, and footwear for your outdoor lifestyle. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the October 1st edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. And the snow in the mountains keeps on building. Barometer Mountain is breathtaking this morning. That autumnal air is crisp and clean. Well, at least until the winds kick all sorts of debris and ash around this weekend. Sometimes the ash that kicks up from the old Nova Rupta eruptions in Katmai brings an unexpected bonus in spectacular sunsets and sunrises. This weekend looks partly cloudy to clear, so keep your eyes open for color. Speaking of eyes and color, this is the time of year that stargazing really kicks into gear. You might see the aurora, or maybe a shooting star or two. We are heading into some potential meteor showers this week, and to some extent, all month. Coming up first will be the Draconid meteor shower, which peaks on the 8th of October, but you might see it as early as this weekend. This one doesn't always produce a ton of meteors each night, but we'll have the advantage that it's pretty early in the evening when it happens compared to other meteor showers, and the moon will have already set. So go out after 10 p.m. when the sky is nice and dark and look up. Admire that view of the Milky Way while you're waiting for a shooting star. Next Saturday, October 9th, is KMXT's Run the Rock, featuring a marathon, half marathon, 10K, and 5K. Registration is online only. You'll find a link at kmxt.org. There are virtual race options and family 5K rates available too. Hope to see you there. Friday night is the Aleutic Museum's annual meeting and a special collections tour, all done online and available on their website at aleuticmuseum.org. The virtual doors to this event open at 5 p.m. on Friday. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.